Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real
energy. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, ALTERRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, ALTERRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Dr. Attorney and Author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific Times. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, area code 646-478-0772. You can email us during the week. Those email addresses are mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, mayor at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is December 1st, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me, my wonderful co-host who has just delivered his 14th grandchild, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, How are you and the baby doing this evening?
Oh, I am absolutely wonderful, but I got to correct you a little bit. My daughter delivered. I caught the baby.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, a technical difference, but incredibly wonderful. You know, I think of the words of my late mentor, Dr. Robert Mendelson, who talked about the virtues of home birth. And he had a whole list of things that are so valuable. There's no visiting hours. You can see your grandchild anytime you want. But I have to have even one thing more to add to it, because Jen and Scott live literally next door to us. And so after the birth was over, after the celebration, after all the cousins and everyone came over, it took me only about 30 seconds to walk home and get into bed. So there's some real value, you know, about this. But this is, I was telling you before the show, Alan, this was one of the most incredible, blessed moments in my wife, Karen, and I, our lives. Because Jen now has the oldest grandchild, almost 20 years old, and now the youngest grandchild. And all the children and grandchildren are close with each other. They all live by, real nearby. And it reminds me, 20 years ago when this incredible journey began, Jen gave birth to Abby, and my oldest son, Jeremy, and his wife, Sue, came over. And Jen was sitting in the same rocker or the same couch that she was 20 years ago. It was a different location, you know. And Sue was holding the baby. And I have to just tell you how incredible home birth is. And Sue asked Jen how it was. And the first birth was kind of a hard birth also. And Jen is telling her sister-in-law, this is way too hard. Don't even think about doing it. I mean, it's like, we didn't know that Sue was pregnant at the time. And Sue calls me up a couple days later and says, Dad, I want to have this baby at home. And I said, Sue, I was there during that conversation. You know, how did you come to this decision? He said, well, I visited so many of my friends after they had babies, and they looked like someone just worked them over. They were so, and Jen was sitting there like a queen. You know, someone was doing her nails, someone was fixing up her hair, she's nursing the baby, and she said, that's the way I want to do it. And I thought that was so interesting, you know. And sure enough, Sue and my wife, my son Jeremy, they have five girls, all born at home, none of them vaccinated, you know, all, thank God, very healthy, you know. And it was just so interesting. It was like the scene had repeated itself 20 years later, and the Lord has really shined his countenance toward the Eisenstein family, because it's kind of like the scene that one movie, I can't remember the name, We're Not Worthy. I just wonder what made us so worthy to be so blessed.
Well, take it, Mayor, and love it and live with it, and thanks for sharing it with all the rest of us, because I feel you've taken some of that beautiful light and shined it our way, too, and we get to bask in a little bit of that just listening to it. It just sounds absolutely wonderful.
You know, my dad used to say, my dad was a rabbi, and even though he didn't practice with a pulpit, but he always had people coming to the house for clerical advice, clerical advice. And he used to say, you're going to be blamed for a lot of things you wasn't your problem. And so take credit for the things that may not have been totally your credit, but people give you credit for it. So I think we're going to take that right now.
Alan, you know, it all balances out me in somewhere.
Yeah. I wrote to you a little bit earlier something we've talked about so many times on the show, but I think it's something that bears repeating, because unfortunately, as things get better, sometimes they get worse. But I just want to preface, and that's about nurses and masks and hospitals. But I want to preface it by one similar type topic, and that was an email I got today from a family in California, and they were watching a TV show which was talking about how worried they were about the high opt-out waiver for vaccines in California, especially in Marin County, where one school district, 32% of the children were not vaccinated. I mean, just really just mind-boggling. And she said the TV show had a doctor on who said the only reason why parents are not vaccinating their children is because these diseases no longer exist, and it's, and I tell them it's because of the vaccines. And once you, once the parents realize that, they all decide to vaccinate. And she said, how shameful for this pediatrician to be so either closed-minded or ignorant that about the flu vaccine. They said, the flu exists, maybe more than ever. They never changed the number. There's 36,000 deaths, be it right or wrong. And 60% of people opt out of the flu vaccine. It's surely because the flu doesn't exist anymore that they are opting out of this vaccine. Did it ever enter her mind, the pediatrician was talking, that the flu, the, these vaccines are dangerous, and that's why a large percentage of families are questioning it? And so I thought just kind of a point that it's no matter how much we talk about it, they keep with the same narrative. People are ignorant. They don't realize how valuable this is. And I think it's a strategy that's backfiring.
Well, it is, Mayor, because when people see in their own family or hear about in someone they know with an injury or death, because both occur, and no one's ever told them about it, then a very normal, healthy human response to that is to feel angry, ripped off, deceived, because that's exactly what's happened. Whether it was deliberate on the part of doctors who simply are misinformed and have never taken the initiative to become informed. Many people, I think, Mayor, are people of integrity who just rely on the bad information they're given. I really don't think it's a majority of people who are conspiring, you know, to further the pharmaceutical agenda. I think it's more a minority who are controlling the thinking and education of doctors and so forth. But, Mayor, when you, with what you just said, what jumps out at me in glaring detail was just one of the things that I encountered very early in my own investigation of this issue as a parent, and that is the research from official government statistics. In fact, Dr. Larry Pilevsky, one of the few outspoken anti-vaccine pediatricians that I know of in the country from up in New York, did a talk here in North Carolina, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago now, and he said it was right there in the medical textbooks in medical school that 90 to 95% of infectious disease decline, childhood infectious disease decline in the 1900s, preceded the introduction of the vaccines. So when a doctor says, whoa, everybody's just not vaccinating because they don't realize that it's the vaccines that got us to this place where we don't have rampant disease, they just don't know what they're talking about. Did they? Was that only in Dr. Pilevsky's medical textbook? I suspect not, but perhaps, you know, maybe he just got that one textbook.
Yeah, he had a unique copy.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, it's this is not conspiracy theory information here, and so they're either ignorant and disturbingly so. It's hard for me to, I try to give these people benefit of the doubt, but Mayor, on something as fundamental as that, I just don't know what to call it. I think it's either incompetence or deliberate fraud, which I think is less likely. I think it's more that these people, most of them anyway, just don't know the correct information. But why they don't know is perplexing to me. And in any event, I feel that as medical professionals, it's their professional duty and obligation to know. Do you have a thought about that?
I do. You know, I think that as Americans, we're the most trustworthy people in this world. It's one of the things that my father always spoke about when coming to this country. I mean, he'd been in so many countries before, mainly escaping Hitler in order to get to America. And he said that there's no country he's ever been in, Poland, Germany, China, Japan, Russia, that the American public is so willing to trust. And he said that's the greatness of this country, because when you become cynical and angry, you lose your ability to really have clear judgment. But that virtue that we all have as Americans also leads us into paths of listening to experts who are not telling us the truth. No one said it better than Jonathan Gruber, the MIT professor who's one of the architects of Obamacare, where he said the American public is stupid and therefore we can't tell them what's in the plan. The trouble is the word stupid was absolutely wrong. They're very accepting of people who they think have credentials, and they don't believe that they would lead them astray. So, Professor Gruber, you're the idiot because you're the one who is lying to the public. You should be ashamed of yourself, not the public who trusted you because you had behind your name MIT, brilliant professor. And, you know, so I think that's what brings this about. But the American public, my dad said, once they figured out that you're lying to them, you never can get back your trust. I think that's what's happening with the president. I think it's happening with this whole agenda of vaccines. You know, there's a lack of trust. And so even if there's some value in some of the vaccine program, the numbers of people who are going to say, at the end, you know, I don't care anymore. You're going to have to really regain my trust. And it's not by just making up numbers or making up statistics or pretending people are dying from lack of vaccines.
Well, we certainly are gullible, and the stories I hear from people overseas suggest that many people in the rest of the world
Alan, wait, change the word. We're trusting, you know, as opposed to gullible. You know, we're trusting and we're taking advantage. I don't think we're gullible. I think that's because it won't help if you put a mother on the air. That's why I've spoken out so many times with all the organizations, the wonderful organizations that are trying to educate the public on vaccines. You can't put a mother who has no credentials, whose knowledge base may be a thousandfold of that of the doctor that she's going on, against the doctor, because the American public can't weigh it. It can't weigh that this mother has spent thousands of hours studying and realized that the problem of her child came from vaccines, and a pediatrician who may have spent no time has credentials. We trust credentials, and I think what's happening is there's enough of us right now in the profession with very good credentials, you know, who can go up against these other doctors, Dr. Humphreys, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Joe Mercola, and I think that we've developed a body of experts. And attorneys like yourself who study these issues for a long time, you know, and I think that that's what's going to happen. We're going to, what Dr. Sherry said, every one of us has the obligation of kind of promoting the truth, and that means we have to kind of be exposed a little bit, going out there and kind of dispelling these myths.
Well, that certainly is the case, and we have to be, you know, I don't think any of us, at least purposefully, signed up to be martyrs, but there's the risk of that. Anytime you speak truth to power, as some people put it, you know, you're setting yourself up to one degree or another to be criticized and attacked. But as we have talked about over the months, Mayor, there are aspects of the way this has this vaccine agenda has been presented and promoted that are just not holding up, even as we suspected or speculated. I don't know if I go so far as to say predicted or not, but we certainly have discussed how they're shooting themselves in the foot, grabbing for some more sure short-term gains at the potential loss over the long term. And they're losing their credibility. And we just need to keep hammering away at the truth here, and we're going to eventually win out, despite the control of the media and other advantages that they have. People, you know, you can fool people with information, I think, up to a point, but when people see something else happening in front of their eyes, it's just real hard for them to reconcile that contradiction by continuing to buy into the words. When what they're seeing in their own lives is inconsistent with that. Now, there are some people who will still deny, even when they see it, but they'll come around eventually as well, too, I think.
Alan, I want to bring up one more thing we talked about a little bit before the show, and that's an email I received from Dr. Bob Martin. Dr. Martin is an outstanding chiropractic physician in the West Coast, and And he has a wonderful radio show, and he, one of his listeners wrote to him, and I want to just read from her a letter. I work at a hospital, and they are mandating that we all have the flu shot or wear a mask until April. I don't like the idea of a flu shot. I didn't have my daughter take them either, so I choose to wear a mask. I have tried several different ones, but they are making my skin break out. My job offers a non-mercury shot, and I am considering it because I don't want to continue with these breakouts, as they are painful, look ugly. They are all red and irritated. What are your thoughts? Thank you very much, and any help you can send me your way. Alan, I know you've dealt with this issue with enormous number of nurses around the country, and I always write back to these nurses, and I said, you've got to retain Alan Phillips. End of story. There is no other alternative. That's the you can't be hiding behind a mask here. It's not going to help. But what thoughts do you have here, just generically? And I want to make sure that all our nurses listening, or anyone, it's more than nursing, it's extended to anyone who works in the hospital right now, what are some of the things they can do, and let them know how they can get a hold of you?
Well, sure, Mayor. Well, the first thing I want to mention, and this was another thing we talked about briefly right before the show, is that I just recently received an email from a hospital employee who was doing her research and determined that the flu block vaccine didn't have all the harmful ingredients that some of the other ones do, and so she decided, bottom line, to get the vaccine, and then she came down with shingles afterward and believed there was a connection, and she went on the internet and found, she says, 256 instances where people said that within a few days or a few weeks after getting flu vaccine that they developed shingles. And you made a very important distinction to me right before the show on this point, that it's not it's not that the vaccine necessarily specifically causes shingles, as more likely it simply suppresses the immune system, and then that allowed the shingles to manifest or develop. But I wanted to just mention that first, that if people are looking for what's the best vaccine to get, there may not be one, you know. But let's come back to that point. If there's anything you want to add to that, Mayor, please. But the mask issue is an interesting one. If a healthcare worker has qualifying religious objections to the vaccine, and by way of very brief introduction only, this is determined by definitions in federal civil rights law and legal precedent. So it's not necessarily about what we think is or isn't a religious belief. It's about how does the law define religion for legal purposes, and the legal purpose isn't about anything more than what beliefs get the protection of law as religious beliefs and what beliefs don't. And it's very, very broad definition. It doesn't matter whether you belong to any church at all or any religious organization. Doesn't matter which one you belong to or subscribe to. If you do belong or subscribe to one, you could literally be an atheist, and there are beliefs that you could hold as an atheist, certain kinds of moral and ethical beliefs that can qualify for protection under federal law as religious beliefs. So when people hear religious exemptions, sometimes they'll say, oh, well, I don't even go to church, or my church isn't against vaccines. Hey, doesn't matter. Look further before you rule yourself out. I mean, literally anybody could potentially qualify for a religious belief. But here's the point. If you have a qualifying religious objection to vaccines, then the employer has to provide what federal civil rights law calls a reasonable accommodation. The employer has to accommodate the employee's religious beliefs and practices. And this law applies to public and private employers and any employer with more than 15 employees. So not real tiny businesses, but certainly any hospital is going to fall in this category. Well, the CDC says, And Mayor, I got to qualify this. You know, I probably disagree with just about everything the CDC says about vaccines, but I think they nailed the mask policy. They recommend you wear a mask when the healthcare worker or the patient have symptoms and they are in close proximity to one another. In other words, it's a symptom-based recommended policy, not a vaccination status-based policy. And it's real simple, Mayor, because what it boils down to is that masks don't block or filter viruses out of the air. They're just too small. The mask, if you can breathe through the mask, then germs are going to get in and out. The mask isn't going to filter them out of the air. So wearing a mask isn't going to make any difference whatsoever in the spread of influenza, and there's research that backs that up. The CDC says there isn't any research that says wearing a mask beyond blocking symptoms really does any good. So it's not these policies that are saying if you don't get the vaccine, you've got to wear a mask. That's not a scientific policy. Therefore, it's not a reasonable accommodation. So because there's no science, the lack of science supports a legal argument that these mask policies that are based on your immunization status violate federal civil rights law. Now, there's one other real basic strong argument here as well, a separate one that's also a federal civil rights law violation. Mayor, as you and I both know, we've talked about many, many times, and the CDC readily acknowledges, at least in general terms on their website, vaccines don't work in everyone. Now, for the sake of discussion, let's assume that if you have this desired antibody response, you have protection or immunity. That's a whole different topic to debate. But in order to make the point, let's assume that their definition of immunity applies. Well, not everybody who gets a vaccine develops immunity. And with vaccines generally, the CDC says that's 5 to 15% of people who get vaccines. And, of course, with flu vaccines, it's probably profoundly greater. But even if we're using that conservative figure or range, 5 to 15, let's say it averages 10% just to make a point. Well, that's probably somewhere between 5 and 10 times, if not more. Vaccinated people who are not immune because their vaccines didn't work, as compared to maybe 1%, if even that many in the hospital setting. But let's give, again, benefit of the doubt, 1 or 2% of people who have exemptions. So there are many times more non-immune hospital workers, the ones whose vaccines didn't work, and none of them have to wear masks. So if the ones that have religious objections have to wear masks, and the other non-immune people don't have to wear masks, then arguably that's discriminatory. They're imposing a penalty on someone because of their religious beliefs, but other people in the hospital setting who are similarly situated, and that's the phrase they would use in the law, you compare people who are similarly situated, and in this arena what really matters is who's immune and who's not immune. Because some hospitals will say, oh, well, we make the medically exempt employees wear masks too. Well, that's not the comparison. Those are not similarly situated people. What matters here, supposedly, health and safety and protection, it's about who's immune and who's not immune. Well, we know from the medical literature, scientific studies, that some people who get vaccines are not immune. But none of those people have to wear masks. So there's two separate bases there for saying that these vaccination-based policies, in other words, if you're not vaccinated, you have to wear a mask, that those policies violate federal civil rights law with respect to people who have a qualifying religious objection to the vaccines. So, Mayor, I've recently revised my formal legal argument on this subject. It's about a 15-page argument to do it fully, and there were at least a half a dozen different specific points where I said, because of X, Y, Z, or whatever, the policy violates federal civil rights law. But those are the two primary points. And I think there's a lot of room here for employees to fight these policies. But what we really need to see happen, Mayor, is for some of these cases to go to court so that we can generate some legal precedent. Because right now, and I've searched this very recently, I don't believe there's any legal precedent out there on the mask issue. So it's one of the aspects of this whole influenza thing and with healthcare workers that is a new issue. And I don't wish a lawsuit on anybody personally, don't get me wrong, but that's the only way we get legal precedent And once there's some legal precedent, and hopefully favorable precedent, so if anybody goes to court on this, I hope they will contact me or have their attorney contact me, because I've given a lot of thought to this over a long period of time, and I believe I could offer some assistance on that. But ultimately, I think the solution legally, or this issue will become more clear legally and easier for people to fight once we have some legal precedent on this issue.
So
that's kind of it in
a
nutshell.
But I also want you to, before we go to break, let our listeners know how they can get a hold of you to help them with this issue. Very, very important.
Well, sure, Mayor, and thank you. And all of my contact information is at vaccinerights.com, vaccinerights.com. But if anyone happens to be listening who doesn't have access to the Internet or convenient access, I can be reached by phone at area code 828-575-2622. That's area code 828-575-2622. Mayor, it is time to go to break. We've got, I think, one of our dear friends on the line that we can bring on after the break here. And, folks, we've got a whole other half of the show to go. Boy, Mayor, it's so wonderful to be back. You know, I won't lie and say I wasn't happy to have a night off last week, but it's just wonderful to be back here with you again. And
Same here.
We'll be back right after the break then and do that. So stay with us, folks. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein and Attorney Alan Phillips.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called
Alta Rush.
I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alta Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alta Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alta Rush, AltaRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Survival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at webseed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. Mayor, before we go to the caller, I wanted to bring up one other quick point that we had talked about recently. I think we had emailed about this. What's going on down there in Mississippi? They are a state that has a distinction in the vaccine world, and maybe some other information that goes along with that. Do you recall what we were emailing about recently?
I surely do, because it was just so Mississippi was so proud that they were number one, in fact, in the Ledger, the Mississippi Ledger, which is one of their top newspapers there in Mississippi. They said Mississippi has nation's top vaccine rate. 99.7% of the kindergarten children in Mississippi are vaccinated. Well, the only problem is that they left out one very small detail, and that is that Mississippi also has the highest infant mortality in the whole country, highest. Now, as I said in a piece I did, correlation doesn't always mean causation, but in order to be fair and balanced, if you're going to talk about the vaccines being so valuable, you may as well also talk about your record as far as healthy children go.
You know, Mayor, Neil Miller was part of a research study that was looking at this same issue internationally, and they found that as immunization rates in countries rise, so does the infant mortality rate. And the U.S., which vaccinates more than any other country in the world, whether it's because we're trusting or gullible, but we have an infant mortality. Now, I've seen different figures from different sources, but even the best figures put us at a level with third world countries. And you would think that if vaccines are really important for child health, and the push to vaccinate infants from birth on, that the countries that vaccinate the most would have really low infant mortality rates. And it turns out that it's just the opposite. So, you know, again, is it a correlation only, or is there a causative element? Maybe there does need to be more research or more transparency of information before we can make that determination. But I think, Mayor, it was really striking to me that what held true that I had heard previously in the world with respect to countries' immunization rates, and we immunize at a rate, in terms of number of vaccines, twice the average of 30 other Western nations. So it's not just a little bit higher than other countries. It's just amazing how many more vaccines we administer here. But that the same thing that held true on the global scale seemed to hold true here in the U.S. with respect to the individual states in that respect. So it's disturbing, you know, when you see the same correlation, you know, more than once. And of course, if there were other levels that we could look at this, I don't know if there are or not. But it reinforces at least the need to take it seriously and look further, at minimum.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, you know, and obviously I feel that there's a very strong correlation between the two. And they also want to leave out one factor about the vaccines, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, and that is the decline in most of these infectious diseases occurred far before the introduction of vaccines, and then just add a couple more elements to that discussion, and that is tuberculosis, cholera, plague, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, all have essentially disappeared with no vaccine being administered in this country. There is a vaccine for cholera. There's also a vaccine for tuberculosis. But for some reason, the Center for Disease Control has decided not to make that a part of the vaccine schedule. I suppose they can't make a good argument because these diseases have totally disappeared before they got a chance to implement a vaccine program.
Well, I'm sure it was just because of all the other vaccines somehow that rubbed off or something. I don't know. But, well, let's not keep our caller waiting any longer. Let's see. Is this Dr. King?
Yes, this is Dr. King.
Oh, yeah.
Thank
and
you.
The first thing I want to tell you is, hello, gentlemen. Nice to have you back.
Nice to have you back.
But, again, I haven't answered your question, which flu vaccine you should get. You should get the
okay.
one Callan gave to those people who didn't get sick. That's a sterile saline flu shot.
I love it.
Because it was twice as effective at preventing people from getting the flu as the ones that got the influenza vaccine. So I think that would be, you know, if you really want to pick the best vaccine, sterile saline. Tell Doc, hey, Doc, give me some of that sterile saline. That stuff worked better than everything else did.
Dr. King, I got to remind, it reminds me of a story. One of my late mentors, Dr. Herbert Ratner, who taught me so much about medicine. He was already a retired physician when I first met him, and he was the health director in Oak Park, but a small suburb in outside of Chicago. But he also was the head medical doctor of the student health union at Loyola Medical School, and he used to have three bottles in his office. And one was colored water red, colored water green, and flavor and colored water orange. And his medical students who got to realize, and this was his treatment for sore throats and strep throat. And his students used to come in, and when they first met him, and they would say, I have a sore throat, and he said, why don't you try the red one? And he told them what was in it. There was nothing. And eventually all these doctors realized that the treatment for many, many diseases was nothing. But he said it was so cute. He said many of his students would come and says, Doc, I need the green one. That one does better than the other two. You know? And they were obviously teasing him also. But that was the way he instructed his students how to deal with most respiratory type of illnesses.
Well, it's not such bad advice.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any adverse side effects.
Exactly.
Unless you're allergic to the dye that was making the water colored.
Right. Today, I think I was told not to use the dye. We could use some natural flavors.
Well, that's possible.
Yeah.
But what I called about was, again, in October, I published one of my editorials, or whatever you want to call them. It was not a review of anything. It was just an set of observations. And I challenged anybody to refute what I said. And since we're now in December, I think they've had adequate time to, if they could, refute what I said, to provide refutation to what I said, and I haven't got one person who has provided me any documentation to overturn my hypotheses. And I want to talk to you all about them because they're terribly critical because people keep saying things that don't make any scientific sense. I really don't appreciate that as a scientist. I understand most scientists have other drivers than science. They want to get a better paycheck or something, I guess. But the reality is what I discussed was for regressive autism. I was very careful to say regressive autism because there are some cases of autism that when the child is born, they are not developing. They're born not developing, and they don't start developing and stop. But for aggressive autism, one of the critical indicators of that is the fact that anyone who has a real diagnosis of aggressive autism, you take a group of them, you find that the males outnumber the females by typically more than 2-1, and generally more than 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, depending on what group of autistic children you're dealing with in the spectrum. Now, you need a plausible biological answer to what's causing that, and any hypothesis you make about change points or whatever driving the reality. And the only chemical or any other substance that I know of that has those properties, and that's what I said, is thimerosal. No other chemical has that unique set of properties. And quite recently, or fairly recently, we understand exactly why, how it works, thimerosal works to make itself even better at causing harm because it actually directly affects the biological mechanisms that cause the production of testosterone to be increased. And somebody said, well, why is that important? Well, some people say, well, because you see, testosterone you've mixed it in there and it causes worse effects. Well, that is a contributing factor, but the real factor that people need to understand is that when you increase thimerosal, you're on a seesaw, on the other end of that seesaw is something called glutathione. If you increase the production of thimerosal, you increase the production of testosterone, you are decreasing the production of glutathione. And glutathione is the chief detox chemical in the human body for almost everything. And that's why it's so much, it drives the bus, so to speak. And anybody who proposes any other bus driver, they need to find some proof that their bus driver also causes this change in sex ratio among the people who are diagnosed with regressive autism. And I've looked at the literature, and all I can find, there are not any studies that show that you don't find this. It's not, the ratio is not greater than 2-1 or 3-1 or 4-1 or whatever. It's 1-1 or it's less than 1-1. And the reason these are very important things is because that's an important critical reality that you must explain with whatever theory you want to adopt. And I'm really tired. I tried explaining to some of the people who hold some of the other theories why, as stated, their theories are full of water or air, hot air mostly, but they don't seem to listen, and their refutations don't seem to be based on any science of which I'm aware. And as a scientist, I don't dismiss anything unless I can prove it's more or less wrong. So I can tell you, although it hasn't been published yet, we did a study that we did publish. We looked at relative toxicity of things, and one of the things we used in our relative toxicity study was something called aluminum. We used a non-toxic form of aluminum called aluminum sulfate, and it actually was protective, and we published that. But what we didn't publish is there were some preliminary studies done where we actually put some aluminum sulfate in with the thimerosal and found that it reduced the toxicity of the thimerosal. So it doesn't appear to be aluminum per se, probably, although to do the experiment right, we would have had to put in another set of experiments with sodium sulfate, and we were out of time for getting the thing to publish and out of time and money for doing more studies at the time, since we don't have the richest supporters in the world pouring tons of millions of dollars in our inbox every 5 seconds. So aluminum doesn't appear to be it. If you look at diseases, you will find that there are diseases for which appear to be aluminum affected. They tend to be autoimmune diseases, and one of their interesting realities is they appear to affect women more than men. That means a male to female ratio of less than 1. Some other people have said something about the MMR vaccine, ignoring the fact that for most all the data they point to, the children were getting some kind of thimerosal-containing vaccine before, after, or during, or at the same time as they were getting the MMR vaccine. So that doesn't seem to fly. And the reason I can say that is, again, when I looked into the VAERS database for diseases that are known to be caused by MMR vaccine. There are some, like thrombocytopenia, which is highly tied to that. And there's idiopathic thrombocytopenia, which is also tied to MMR vaccine as a really biggest source of this particular reality. And in both cases, their ratios, even when thimerosal is around, their ratios are less than 2. They typically run about 1.2 if you look at the era when most of the thimerosal was out of the vaccines that children were getting. So it doesn't seem to be a good candidate either. The thing about DNA, I hear that all the time too, and again, it doesn't satisfy the male-female ratio. There's no logical mechanism by which DNA can selectively go after one sex and not the other if it's a DNA fragment running around inside the body doing bad things. And there are some diseases we're now seeing, and they appear, at least so far, to affect females much more than males, and those are the diseases associated with giving the HPV vaccine. even if you have to correct for the fact a lot more girls have been given it, but they are giving it to males, and I don't hear stories about males having these horrendous reactions. Do you?
No.
No.
I haven't,
so
yeah.
If that's not true, then it can't be that this is a male-female ratio problem where males are the ratio is much higher than males to females. And I mean, someone might argue, well, there's not enough people getting injected with their male. Well, again, according to what I see, it's the biggest increase in sales that the people are having to sell Gardasil in the United States are in males. Because the females are kind of getting high, you know, it's getting harder to convince mothers to risk their kids when they know that they're going to be a big risk of being one less, like dead. Because that advertisement is very true. If you get it, you can be one less. One less healthy person, one less live person, one less something. One of the things that I don't hear anybody talking about much, we talk about dead people because that's easy to do, but we don't talk about the fact that a very high percentage of those women who get Gardasil shots end up with a medical condition, a diagnosed medical condition that they didn't have before they got the vaccine. Now, I mean, if I were a pharmaceutical company, that'd be music to my ears. I'm making chronically ill people while convincing them that I'm protecting them for something I can't possibly protecting them from. Because cancer of the cervix doesn't come for decades later, and there's probably no truth to the fact that it really prevents any cancer per se. It might contribute to some health along the way, but not really prevents, because by the time, even with the best projections I see, by the time women get old enough to be protected, the vaccine won't be providing any protection. It'll all have, quotes, worn off, you know, and you'll need boosters. But right now, of course, there are limits on how old you can give this thing to, because it turns out that with the healthiest of people and whatever, when you start giving it to older women, the adverse outcomes go way up, so much so that even the wonderful Food and Drug Administration refused to, so far, I mean, it may cave in tomorrow, refused to authorize the vaccine to be given to older women based upon the data that Merck had. And that was one of the reasons probably why Merck was so happy to cancel their clinical trial before it was completely over when they got the fast-track approval. Well, it's approved. We don't need to keep this clinical trial running. We'll just stop that. And they published so much about what they found. In fact, they did so much that they made one of the people that helped them develop the vaccine so angry that she told the truth, that she didn't think the vaccine was worth anything. I haven't heard much from her lately. I doubt if I will.
Oh, you definitely will not.
I would assume they found some way to get her attention, silence her, or whatever. So those are all the things I want to talk about, because, again, I get tired of hearing people say, well, they took the thimerosal out of vaccines. Well, that's very nice. They took it out of some vaccines, and they took their sweet time doing that. But they put the flu vaccines, which have no proof they ever worked, and certainly not worked in children under the age of two. They started giving them to children 6 months old and older, 6 to 23 months at first, then 6 to 35 months, and then 6 to 59 months, and then 6 to, well, it's someplace in between 9 and 10. And then they said, oh, well, forget about that. We'll just give it every year to everybody. Now, if you don't believe that's the height of medical insanity, I don't know what is. Because other than create people who are chronically ill, that's a recipe for nothing that I know is any good. Because all the immune studies that I read say that if you keep giving things over and over again to people, they develop immune and autoimmune diseases. Well, it doesn't seem you want to do that if you really want to risk. But then again, if I'm right, and we do not have a healthcare system but a disease management system, that the goal is to manage people so you get the best yield on your profits, well, then of course you'd want to make them chronically ill, because that's more money for you.
Dr. King, it always strikes me as I can't believe that could be the ultimate agenda of anyone to try to make people sick. But surely the facts point in that direction.
Well, again, they may not, their agenda doesn't care about that. Their agenda is to make the highest profit. You compute too much thinking beyond their goals. They're driven by greed. People driven by greed don't care about those things. So they're not deliberately doing it. They're doing it because it makes them more money.
But there's another element here, too, and it's called psychopathy. There are a certain percentage of the population. I've seen different figures ranging from 4 to 8%, maybe because they're vaccine damaged, who knows, but people who literally lack the ability to feel remorse for the adverse events of their acts or decisions. You know, we hear about it in the classic case where the murderer is convicted for his heinous crime and shows no remorse, you know, when they hand down the verdict. Well, this condition, not necessarily in that extreme level, but the inability to experience or feel compassion, to have remorse for the negative effects of your decisions or actions in other people, this is a condition that a percentage of the population has, and this can be in people who are otherwise intellectually brilliant, capable of rising up the ladder. In fact, if they do not have it at such an extreme level where they shoot themselves in the foot in some way, they are actually more competitive and more likely to rise up the corporate or political ladder to positions of power and control, because they will do things that the rest of us won't in order to get there. So in a very odd sort of way, they have an advantage competitively as long, again, as they don't go so far out of bounds that they take themselves out of the race altogether. So I've even heard it said that CEOs, that these people make particularly good CEOs because of their ability to focus on only the bottom line and the dollar figures. I mean, you look at the fact that at least three different companies, pharmaceutical companies, have had billion-dollar criminal fines, and criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars are common. You don't get a criminal fine unless you violate criminal law and know you're doing it.
Well,
so,
if you're a banker, you don't get a criminal fine, and if you do violate the law, I know you're doing it.
Well, right, and there's a similar sort of dynamic that seems to apply with large pharmaceutical companies and maybe other large companies as well. But the point is, Mayor, that I think, this is my personal opinion, but I think one of the biggest barriers to furthering vaccine awareness is people's inability to recognize or comprehend that there are people in decision-making positions who know what's going on and do what they're doing anyway, whether they have suppressed or completely lack altogether their ability to function in the way that we would like to see them function. There are people who are able to make decisions and further an agenda, even though it causes avoidable injuries or even deaths to other people. I mean, there are probably some people who feel like, well, there's too many human beings anyway, we need to get rid of some. I can't, you know, behave on that kind of thinking, but clearly other people do.
Well, Mr. Gates.
Some other people.
Yeah, Mr. Gates, we have too many people around.
Now, Dr. King, thank you so much. We just have about a minute left, you know, and wow, you know, just the conversation are so deep that it's difficult to try to go to bed afterwards thinking about what our next move is going to be. But Dr. King, it's always a pleasure having you with us as one of our honored guests on the show. You know, and thank you so much, and please keep coming on. You know, thank you. You know, Alan, I think we just have about a minute to wrap it up, and we'll hope to see everyone next week.
Yeah, well, I want to let folks know they can read Dr. King's articles and studies and information on his website, dr-king.com, I believe. Yes, dr-king, K-I-N-G.com. Of course, Mayor at homefirst.com and myself, vaccinerights.com. You have been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and our wonderful and fortunate for all of us repeating guest, Dr. Paul King, who comes in with just wonderfully insightful information from the medical research. We will be here next couple of Monday evenings, and we will be... make us talk over the music here for just a few seconds here. We'll be taking a couple of weeks off at the end of the month, folks, but we'll be here the next couple of Monday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, and proudly rebroadcast naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We'll see you next week, folks.
Throughout the land, let no one pray.